For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast.
And I don't think it's unrealistic to say that in the space of 5 years, maybe less, we can start seeing some printable dosage forms in compounding pharmacies.
While ordering your tea Earl Grey hot from a Star Trek-style replicator may be some years off, the technology to 3D print personalised medications tailored to a particular patient's needs is well and truly here, even if the regulatory framework needed is lagging behind. Imagine a world where you have a patient coming off antidepressants, for example. Instead of cutting tablets to get half and quarter pills to step down the dose, imagine ordering customised pills from the compounding pharmacy at exact doses 3% less each day until withdrawal is completed. That's one of several scenarios envisaged by University of Queensland researchers Amirali Popat and Liam Kruger, who have co-authored a perspective on the subject for the MJA. The technology, the printers themselves, the polymers, the filaments, already exists. What is missing in Australia is the legislation and regulatory framework. Amirali and Liam are my special guests today. You've written this lovely piece about 3D printing medications. Is 3D printing at that point?
Yeah, we're there. We've got heaps of trials now that have 3D printed medications. There's right. A few different 3D printing technologies that have been used to do it. There is one 3D printed pharmaceutical currently on the market in America called Spritam, which is approved by the FDA. So that's really exciting. But yeah, there are plenty of other primary research trials that have showed that it's definitely a feasible dose option. Yeah.
Why do you think this would be an advantage? I mean, we're talking about personalized medicine. How do you see this being a terrific option?
The two main standout things, in my opinion at least, is being able to do customized doses. Currently, you can only take the strengths that are on the market. There's not really any in between. So if you want to do that, you have to, you know, go the extra mile of cutting and splitting tablets to get the right dose. So that would sort of automate that process to get a custom dose every time. And there's also polypills, you know, combining several drugs into one tablet. There are a few combination dosage forms that exist on the market, but not many. And you can't pick what drugs are in there or what strengths. You only get the combinations that exist at their fixed strengths. And that's it. There's not much flexibility currently.
How practical is the proposition of personalizing a patient's medications in this way?
Personalizing medicine is becoming more and more popular, and or not, it actually happens in a hospital where a doctor or a surgeon or a GP looks at a patient and say, you know, based on your genetic profile, based on your other medication and other diseases, this is a particular medicine for you. What we are talking about is a step up here, a step up where you could actually personalize medicine individually or for a group of people in a very fairly flexible manner. Mm-hmm. So what Liam talked about is a medication where you need to titrate the doses, or you could have multiple drugs in one pill. For example, you could have five or more drugs in one pill printed with different release properties. So when you take that pill, one of them is going to be activated straight away and the other one's going to be activated after 6 hours, for example. That kind of flexibility 3D printing can offer, particularly for pharmaceuticals. The FDM printers are really inexpensive. You could buy one off Amazon for $300, and that's a FDM type printer. What we are also talking about is for patients such as elderly patients with a visual disability or visually impaired patients, children where they have swallowing problems or they don't like to take tablets. So we can make softer tablets like gummies with different colors and different shapes. And all of those things can happen on site, on demand, in a hospital setting or in a pharmacy. And that's where we call it a truly personalized medicine, or at your doorstep, basically.
If you're talking about a polypill, how do you stop the drugs interacting with each other?
So there are multiple ways that could happen. One of the ways is the way where currently the traditional tableting manufacturing avoids that. So you could have two separate types of polymers, and you could have a bridge in between. So you could have a layer of a polymer that actually separates the interaction between, say, drug A and drug B, or and that's really exciting because in a conventional manufacturing setting, it is really, really hard to do because you're talking about manufacturing hundreds of thousands of dosage forms. Here, you could do that for a group of people if you need 100, 200, or based on the prescription, you could make 20 that's needed. So that's a really exciting prospect.
If we can do this now with a $300 printer off Amazon, why isn't it happening, you know, now?
I think a big reason for that is that there's no legislation around it, especially in Australia. There's no regulations onto 3D printed dosage forms, and definitely nothing in the way of customizing doses, particularly for a patient. So the Spritam that is approved in America, it's a dispersible tablet of an anti-epileptic, levetiracetam, which just dissolves in the mouth. So it dissolves in under 5 seconds in the mouth in doses up to 1,000 milligrams, which is great. Yeah, you can't get that kind of release with conventional tablets. But although it is an approved 3D printed product in America, it's not approved to be customized doses. You can't change the strengths or flavors for different patients, you know, depending on their needs. It only comes in those fixed strengths. So yeah, definitely it's a huge step forward. It's great to see an approved 3D printed product, but we're not at the stage yet of truly personalized dosing.
What does the TGA have to say?
What's happening with the FDA approval is they're treating 3D printed medications just as any other medication. So it's a technology behind that is different, but you are essentially just approving a pharmaceutical for a human use, for example.
Yes.
So I think that portion is not fast tracked or it's not slower. It's exactly the same as, you know, if you would be applying to get an approval for another formulation. What is really exciting is that as the technology progresses in terms of artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. technology progresses in terms of miniaturizing the 3D printers, you know, connecting that with a smartphone, connecting that with your script. So the future, what they're talking about, and there are a couple of trials that has happened in Spain and UK in the past few years about putting those 3D printers in a hospital pharmacy and actually using it to a compound medicine as the scripts come in or as the requirements come in. So the future could look like is that you have a wearable device, a sensor, a watch or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that watch sends a message to you that you're not well, something's wrong with you. Or you have a glucose sensor, which tells you that, you know, your blood glucose is lower or higher.
Yep.
And that sends a message to a sensor, like a digital script from your pharmacy to a 3D printer, which is kind of like a digital manufacturing device. And then that makes or prints a dosage form suitable to you for that particular day or that particular need. And you go and pick it up after a couple of hours later, and the cycle sort of rotates. And that's what they're talking about. That's what's going to be the future of personalized medicine, where the whole cycle is technologically driven, AI driven, metadata driven.
I can see some doctors going, shouldn't it be doctor driven?
Well, it is. It is in a way, right? Because every step of the way, if you see that will have a check, fact checks, right? So quality control is going to be there. So when the script is being printed, a pharmacist would be aware about it, right?
Yeah.
Doctors will prescribe it. So your data will be recorded in the system. And based on the artificial intelligence, they will say, well, this person is this age, this much height, has got these indications. Now, this is the problem. Let's diagnose it. So you would have a phone call with the doctor or a Zoom chat with the doctor or whatever. And then they will send a digital script to the pharmacy, and then pharmacist will vet it. And then the whole process of the automation starts from there. It's much faster. I'll give you a quick example. In oncology, for example, once the patient leaves the hospital, there's a huge pill burden, and a lot of those medications needs to be given to the patients on site at the hospital. Now, imagine if that can happen at a pharmacy, compounding pharmacy, because you could have those cartridges, you could have those inks, and pharmacists can directly have a chat with the oncologist saying that this patient needs this customized dosage form today for the next 3 weeks, and the pharmacist could print it. That will save a lot of cost, and a lot of patient compliance can be achieved through this process.
I think it'd be absolutely in the interest of Big Pharma to jump in and start this next generation of personalized medicine. This is everything at the moment is directing us towards personalized medicine and, mm-hmm. and not treating everybody as a general population. You know, everybody has different conditions and we can't all be treated by one drug at one dose. The way you respond to drugs depends on genetics. You know, ethnicity can change your expression of genes and yeah. things like that. So gender. Personalizing medications is absolutely where we're heading. And this is just such a simple and effective way to do it. So absolutely, we'd love to see more big pharma companies jump on board with this and take the charge and move away more from conventional manufacturing and convert some of that into 3D printed personalized dosing.
A quick thing here, while Liam is talking about big pharma, and I think one of the interesting thing that could come out of this is that a lot of the drugs that were actually not approved because of the demand and because of the market, they didn't go to the public because there was really no benefit of manufacturing them in a larger scale, or pharmaceutical companies didn't see a benefit in their economic benefit or patient benefit in there. Yeah. Now that a lot of those drugs can come back on the market because you could actually make a very small batches of that. You don't necessarily need to make them in hundreds of thousands. You know, you could make smaller dosage forms. You could make, you could do lots of smaller clinical trials with those drugs much more easily, and it's more feasible and it's more cost effective. Mm-hmm. So I agree in a way that pharmaceutical companies are slowly going to jump on this. Right now, maybe the interest may not sound like that everybody's on board, but I think it's happening. In 2020, a company called FebRx launched their 3D printers for large-scale manufacturing. And so I'm assuming that there must be demand to purchase those machines.
I'm chatting with Associate Professor Amirali Popat and PhD candidate Liam Kruger from the University of Queensland about 3D printing of personalised medications. Their co-authored perspective is available at mja.com.au, and you'll find the link in the show notes of this podcast. You can also find a news article on this topic in this week's issue of Insight Plus, the weekly online news magazine of the MJA. It's an open access publication which requires no login to read. You can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter by visiting insightplus.mja.com.au and clicking the subscribe button. Back to our chat. Do we know financially what this will do for the cost of a pill?
It's likely going to be more expensive, but hopefully not by much. You can't get the bulk savings as if you were printing hundreds of thousands of tablets at a time. Yep. But where you would save costs is logistics, because ideally you would have printers set up at compounding pharmacies and hospitals throughout the country. And because all you've got to ship there is the filaments, essentially, that are feeding the drug-loaded polymer through the nozzle to build the tablet. But all the tablets and everything are printed on site for the patient. You're not having to ship hundreds or thousands of boxes to the pharmacy every day. It's all there and produced on site. The polymers that are being used are often really quite inexpensive. So those cost of materials aren't necessarily going to be through the roof, but saving on logistics is great, I think.
Yeah, another area where this could be economically very beneficial is when we have disasters or when we have medicine shortages, right? It's much harder to get, certain medicines during, COVID. And 3D printing is certainly one way of the future where we are going to see a lot more movement in this area, and that could actually save a lot of cost and a lot of lives as well.
Are polymers plastic?
In the most technical sense, yes. Right. Yes, they are classed as plastics. They're thermoplastics, which means that they turn into sort of a molten or liquid state at higher temperatures.
Okay.
And as they're cooled, they completely revert back to their old form. And the polymers that we're using here, they're not dangerous plastics or anything. They're already used in conventional tablets. They're used as excipients and fillers. So these polymers or plastics that we're using, we already take them every day in heaps of different pharmaceutical dosage forms. We're not using anything new, really. And all of these polymers, as well as already being used in hundreds or more of dosage approved conventional products.
So we're not talking about the microplastics that end up in the ocean.
No, the polymers that we are going to be using for 3D printing are fully biocompatible. Most of them are completely biodegradable as well, and non-toxic, and have no adverse reactions when in contact with the human body.
I'm seeing nothing but upside, guys.
Yeah. Most of them that we're going to be using, we use when we do our research, are FDA approved. So US FDA approved. And a lot of them are cellulose based. So it's nothing but sugar based polymers. Some, a lot of the control release ones are cellulose based and completely biodegradable. Of course, there's as the research in the area of cartridge progresses, there will be new materials that will be developed to alter the properties of the currently available technology. And that's happening in conventional pharmaceuticals as well. On a daily basis, you'd find that there will be new polymers, a new excipient for making a tablet, new excipient for making a capsule, new excipient for making gels come on the market, and they go through a regulatory approval. And if someone invents a new material that can be converted into a filament, that will have to go through the similar type of rigorous approval processes before it can be given to the human. So we're not talking a completely new thing that we are giving it. A lot of the times the excipients are very much the same. It's the ratio and it's how you mold it or extrude it and how you make it. It makes the whole difference.
If you're already manufacturing stuff with biodegradable, edible materials, why can't you put nutrients in a pill? Why can't you make a bacon sandwich for the people in, I don't know, wherever, who's starving? Surely that's a bit of blue sky thinking that's not beyond blue sky.
What we know already is that there's lots of products out there that are, food-based products. Like, for example, there's lots of products with whey protein or milk-based protein or...
Yep.
And those products, those shakes and those muscle building proteins, people put all sorts of flavors, all sorts of nutrients, vitamins, minerals, antioxidants already in there. There's a lot of food companies who are actually currently making snacks with vitamins and minerals, healthy snacks.
Yeah.
Fortified. And a lot of those actually are extruded products, if you see. So the technology behind that is actually not very different. The first step of extrusion is exactly the same or very similar, that you are, raw materials go through that, process of melting and, solidifying. In this case, what we're doing is we are using medicine or drugs with a polymer that can form a tablet instead of making a snack. So technology behind it is not very different. Or bacon sandwich. Exactly. Yeah.
So it sounds like, getting back to the personalized medicine thing, it sounds like what's holding things up is not so much the technology or even the money, but the regulatory side of things. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's a really important factor. And we still don't have heaps of data behind it to get the regulatory approval. And for that, we need very large scale clinical trials. A lot of the papers published at the moment just show the primary research. And, they're still doing the testing to prove that the dose accuracy and all the other characteristics that a dosage form would need to have can meet the expectations that are set for conventional tablets. But we're missing, the very large scale clinical trials that take a lot of time and money. That's where big pharmaceuticals companies could definitely play a massive role towards getting this approved.
Are you hopeful that those big trials will come?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think this is the way. There's no two ways about it. I think it's absolutely going to happen. I think that the main question is just when. And I think the sooner that big pharmaceutical companies get on board, the quicker we're going to get there. And I don't think it's unrealistic to say that in the space of 5 years, maybe less, we can start seeing some printable dosage forms in compounding pharmacies. Well, one thing that I just wanted to talk about quickly, which I think might pique the interest of some doctors there, is dose titrations. So particularly when we're talking about drug classes like antidepressants, painkillers, or some blood pressure tablets as well, they can have genuinely serious side effects when the dose is changed too quickly. And there are lots of examples of drugs. The first one that I think of is antidepressants. And the marketed strengths, as you step up in strength, it's only available as double the dose of the previous strength. So as the patient, when you're increasing a dose, you either have to persist through the side effects until your body gets used to the double dose, or you go the extra mile in terms of splitting tablets or mixing low and high doses to get an in-between dose. And there's the same issue with weaning off tablets, because then you get withdrawal effects when you need to come down. So the possibilities of titration with 3D printing are endless. If you want to double the dose over the space of a month, you can set the parameters in your printing software to increase the dose, for example, by 3% of the starting strength every day until the new target dose is met. You can schedule the titration up or down very gently. You can adjust it by any interval over any period of time. And you can only imagine how beneficial this would be, you know, not just for reducing side effects, but improving the patient's tolerance and acceptance of drugs that they otherwise might not be inclined to continue with due to side effects. If you go to your pharmacy and you get your, you know, your 4 weeks worth of tablets printed day 1 through 28, all automated, you don't have to worry about it. You just take your one tablet daily in order that it's printed, and it'll step down your dose as slowly as you need it to each day.
As we are discovering now that there's a lot of clinical trials and there's a lot of research happening in this space, particularly printing pharmaceuticals, and combining that with the personalizing medicine and working closely with hospitals and compounding pharmacies. And I think this is where the future is heading. It is very close to coming. And as I said earlier, it sounds like a sci-fi movie that you press a button and drug will be printed, but it will happen. It will happen very shortly. And, you know, myself and Liam, and we are at the University of Queensland, very excited to be part of that research.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.